is Local Talk here on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for the hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for joining us, and good morning, Central Iowa. The weather, in a nutshell, will be sunny and hot during the first part of the week and rainy and cooler in the second part of the week. Today and tomorrow and Wednesday will be sunny with a high near 90, with nights in the high 50s and low 60s. It may begin to rain on Wednesday night, and for the rest of the week through Sunday, rain is expected with thunderstorms and temperatures dropping down to the 70s and 50s at night. Good to have rain, but it would have been nice to have it a little bit earlier in the summer. Okay, I just want to say one thing about stink bugs. I'm really tired of the stink bugs in the house. All right, here's Dennis and the news.
The coronavirus, the re-election decision by Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley, and lots of new Iowa polls involving Grassley, President Biden, and the issue of abortion all made big news around the state last week. First, the virus. There was word that more than 12,000 new cases of the coronavirus had been confirmed in Iowa. That brought the total number of cases in Iowa to more than 476,000 since the pandemic started. The state saw an average of more than 1,700 new cases a day. 3,000 of those new cases last week were children. In addition, 81 more deaths were reported from the virus in Iowa, bringing to 6,482 the total number of people in the state who have died from it. One of those was a student at Mount Mercy University, a private Catholic liberal arts university in Cedar Rapids. She was identified as 21-year-old Ashley Hudson. And more Iowans were hospitalized with the virus last week than at any other time this year. 638 residents were in the hospital with the virus. More than 80% of those hospitalized with the coronavirus were not fully vaccinated. There was also word that the Ankeny School District had voted to reinstate a mask mandate for all staff, students, volunteers, and visitors while they're inside district buildings during regular school hours. At least two other school districts, in Johnston and Boone, also voted to require masks. They joined the Des Moines, West Des Moines, and Urbandale districts in the metro to require masks after a federal judge had blocked Iowa's law that banned districts from mandating mask use. And in a related story last week, a Council Bluffs mother paused her lawsuit against Iowa's ban on school mask mandates while the challenge involving the federal judge's ruling works its way through the federal system. Meanwhile, a new Des Moines Register Mediacom Iowa poll released yesterday showed that Iowans are nearly evenly split when it comes to laws banning mask mandates. 50% of state residents oppose such laws, and 47% favor them. And a clear majority of Iowans, 55%, say they would support requiring the coronavirus vaccine for children once it receives full federal approval. All this coming as the maker of the Pfizer vaccine says a new study shows it is safe and effective for children 5 to 11 at a third of the dosage approved for adolescents and adults. And the Federal Food and Drug Administration and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention authorized the use of a Pfizer booster shot for millions of Americans who got the earlier Pfizer shots. And while all this was going on last week, there was word that Iowa Medical Director and Epidemiologist Dr. Caitlin Padotti is leaving the State Department of Public Health to pursue new career opportunities. Padotti has played a big role in the state's response to the coronavirus pandemic, especially in the early days of that pandemic. She had appeared less often at Governor Reynolds' press conferences in recent weeks. In political news around Iowa last week, the biggest story was that 88-year-old Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley announced that he will run for re-election next year. Grassley had kept the political world in suspense for the better part of a year about his intentions. His decision means he will be running for an eighth term in office. His announcement came just days after a new Des Moines Register Mediacom Iowa poll came out, showing Grassley defeating Democrat Abby Finkenauer by 18 percentage points among likely voters. Grassley leads Finkenauer 55% to 37% among likely voters. Finkenauer has announced she plans to run for his seat. She served one term as Iowa's first congressional district congresswoman, but lost a re-election bid to Republican Ashley Hinson last year. Another new Iowa poll last week showed that President Biden's job approval rating in Iowa had plummeted to 31%, while 62% disapproved. That's a 12 percentage point drop in Biden's approval from last June. The poll showed that Biden has nearly no support from Republicans in Iowa. 95% of them disapprove of his job performance. Biden's job approval rating is lower than former President Trump's worst showing in an Iowa poll. Another new poll showed that more than half of all Iowans oppose President Biden's effort to pressure millions of American workers into accepting coronavirus shots. 52% of Iowa adults oppose that plan, while 45% favor it. The plan is, like almost everything else in American society, highly partisan. 93% of Iowa Democrats support Biden's plan, while just 21% of Republicans do. Among Iowans who have been vaccinated against the virus, 65% favor the president's move on employer mandates. But among those who have not been vaccinated, just 3% of Iowans say they favor President Biden's plan. And yes, another new poll showed that the job approval rating for Iowa's other Republican U.S. Senator, Joni Ernst, had gone up a bit. 48% of Iowans approve of the job Ernst is doing, while just 38% disapprove. And there was more polling to report. Another new Iowa poll showed that most Iowans believe abortion should be legal. 57% of the state's residents say it should be legal in most or all cases, while 38% say it should be illegal in most or all cases. 88% of Democrats say it should be legal in most or all cases. Just 30% of Republicans in Iowa believe that. And one more poll from last week, word that 85% of Iowans say the ethanol industry is critically or fairly important to the state's economy. 10% of respondents say it's not, and 5% are not sure. Iowa is the nation's biggest producer of both ethanol and corn. About half the state's corn production each year is used to make ethanol. And Iowa is the nation's largest producer of biodiesel, which is made from soybean and other vegetable oil. The state is the nation's second biggest producer of soybeans. In other political news last week, a nonpartisan government oversight group said that Democratic Iowa 3rd District Congresswoman Cindy Axne had failed to properly disclose between $43,000 and $645,000 in stock trades. The Campaign Legal Center accused Axne and six other members of Congress of failing to file periodic transaction reports relating to stock trades. That would violate the Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge, or STOCK Act. In a statement, a spokesperson for Axne said any errors in reporting were unintentional. Also last week, Republican 2nd Congressional District incumbent Marionette Miller Meeks said she would run for re-election next year. Miller Meeks won that seat last year by 6 votes against Democrat Rita Hart. Also last week, Governor Reynolds joined 25 other Republican governors in calling for a meeting with President Biden about immigration and drug trafficking at the southern border. You'll remember that Reynolds sent Iowa State Patrol troopers to the U.S. border with Mexico in July to assist border patrols. That cost the state of Iowa about $300,000. In a letter from the 26 Republican governors, they said the federal government has created a crisis at the border, and in their words, it has left our states to deal with challenges that the federal government has a duty to resolve. There was also word that the head of the Iowa Finance Authority had decided to apply for a second round of emergency assistance that Congress approved this past spring as part of the American Rescue Plan Act. The $120 million will be used to help Iowans pay overdue rent that was missed because of the coronavirus pandemic. The move comes as Iowa Legal Aid has seen an unprecedented number of Iowans seek help to stop evictions. Meanwhile, the Des Moines Register reported that a Northwest Iowa grain cooperative had become the victim of a cyber attack that the newspaper said could signal Russian-linked groups are starting to target smaller farm businesses in rural America as bigger businesses tighten their security. The attack was made against New Cooperative, a farm services business with headquarters in Fort Dodge. It has 60 locations, mostly in northwest and central Iowa. That attack comes on the heels of a ransomware attack on the giant meatpacking company JBS in late May. There was also word that a Des Moines beer distributor had been ordered to pay a hefty fine for violating federal law tied to beer sales at the Iowa State Fair. Iowa Beverage Systems offered to pay $325,000 to settle alleged trade practice violations with the U.S. Department of the Treasury. The department's Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau accused Iowa Beverage Systems of negotiating a sponsorship, which, in exchange for paying $100,000, the company obtained a certain number of beer taps at the fair's grandstand. There was also a report that two Des Moines police officers will have to face a lawsuit accusing them of wrongfully handcuffing a West Des Moines man in 2018. That decision by a federal judge revives a lawsuit brought by DeJuan Haynes, who had sued the officers and the Des Moines police chief. And there was word that the Sierra Club of Iowa was suing the State Department of Natural Resources over its approval of a nutrient management plan that allows an 11,600-head cattle feedlot to operate in northeast Iowa. The Sierra Club claims the DNR's decision to approve that beef lot jeopardizes Bloody Run Creek, which is a nearby cold water trout stream designated as an outstanding Iowa water. In the world of college football, Iowa style this past weekend, Iowa State University opened Big 12 conference play by losing to Baylor 31-29. The University of Iowa remained undefeated, beating Colorado State 24-14. And one more note from the world of sports last week, word that women's wrestling will be coming to the University of Iowa. The team will start competing in the 2023-2024 season. Iowa will become only the third NCAA Division I school to add women's wrestling, and the first among the so-called Power Five schools to add it. And that is your summary of the week's news from all across Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart, wrestling my way out of here now, but planning to make my return tonight at 7 on KHOI Radio's Capital Week, when Laura Bellin and I will talk about politics Iowa style and what it means for all of us. But that's not all, because I'll also be right back here on Friday morning at 7, when I'll report on what's been making news in Ames. And I hope you can join us for all of it. And I hope you'll have a great week.
That's the music of Barn Cat. Barn Cat is a spontaneous band that constituted itself out of three people in the alley next to KHOI downtown here in Ames during the Octagon Arts Festival. And congratulations to the Octagon for a beautiful festival. It was a beautiful day, and it was really the fifth annual arts festival and kind of a return after a year hiatus during the pandemic. And these guys, the Barn Cat, I think they made up their name as well as their band on the spot here yesterday and really brought a lot of pleasure to everybody throughout the day. So this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host, Ursula Rudenberg. Thanks for listening this morning. Carolyn Klaus is president of the League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County. Welcome to Local Talk, Carolyn. It's good to have you back.
Good morning.
Good morning. Okay, so Carolyn, you're here because tomorrow is National Voter Registration Day.
Right. When I joined the League 11 or 12 years ago, it became sort of a goal at that time. What do we need to do? And it was one of the goals. And missions of the League is to register voters, and we started then registering voters in Story County. And at that time, we even went outside of Story County. We went all over Central Iowa and trying to work with other leagues. And now with the pandemic, we're back to pretty much, let's see what we can get done in Story County. So we have six locations that will be registering voters tomorrow. From 2 to 5:30, we're at the Hy-Vee East, which is that Lincoln Center. And from 2 to 5:30, we're at the other Hy-Vee. Those are outside the stores. Watch for us. We have signs up, and there's a table there and workers to register voters.
And what time again will you be there?
The two Hy-Vees are from 2 to 5:30.
So basically tomorrow afternoon.
Tomorrow afternoon, correct. Mm-hmm. But we start at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. And so from 10 to 4 tomorrow, we will be at the Ames Public Library. And that table will be inside and, you know, we'll be there all day. Not only can you register, if all of a sudden you looked at your calendar and you said, I won't be here November 2nd for the city and school election, then you can request an absentee ballot at this time, and they will be sent from the auditor's office on October 13th. And then you want to get that filled out and sent back right away. We have two locations on campus. We're doing in the South Yard, south of Parks Library, and those are from 10 to 2. It's sort of like catching the morning students and the afternoon students. And the other location on campus is Memorial Union. So we have two heavy traffic areas for the ISU students and, you know, educating them on this upcoming election. And our sixth place, and we are really excited to be there, will be at Wheatsfield from 2 to 5:30, and we'll be outside their doors. So if you're driving downtown Ames and you go, oh, geez, I can register today. Or we have lots of information about the upcoming election. We have handouts that will tell you about where our satellite voting will be on October 14 at Sheman and October 30 at the Ames Public Library. But I also want to share with you, this Thursday night, we're doing basically an information event at the Ames Public Library. It will be live streamed, and it starts at 6 o'clock, and it's a conversation with our county auditor, Lucy Martin. She's going to go over this election for November 2nd, and she's going to tell about the new election laws, go over the dates, and she'll be doing that in conjunction with our moderator, Karen Kodrowski, who runs the Carrie Chapman Catt Center, and is quite knowledgeable on elections.
Where does one get this stream?
We partnered with the NAACP. It's a Facebook live stream, and it's also a YouTube stream, and it's Ames, Iowa NAACP, and Ames branch of the NAACP, and you can go there at 6 o'clock and you can hear both of those discussions. And yeah, it will be, you know, like a, if you go to Facebook and put those in, or so, YouTube.
So it's Facebook or YouTube, and you go to Ames, Iowa NAACP, or
yes,
Ames branch NAACP.
Ames branch of the NAACP.
Of the, okay.
Or you can go to the Ames Public Library Auditorium.
Because it'll be a live event, too.
You're right.
What day again is that?
Thursday at 6 o'clock.
Okay. Sounds very informative.
Very informative.
The new law is set up so that if you didn't vote in the last election, you're not automatically eligible to vote in the next election. Is that true?
No. I think it's the last two elections. And you get a postcard that says your name. If you don't reply to this, you could be purged.
But that doesn't count if you're a new voter, right? So if you're registering for the first time, you automatically have the right to vote, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. You can vote.
Okay.
With that new law, because you can register at age 17, you can't vote at 17, but you could register at 17, they kind of got in the mix of never having voted. So if you're 17 and you registered, you should check to see if you are, because you may have been taken off the voter registration list.
That's complicated. Why, for starters, why would you register if you're not eligible to vote?
Well, let's say you're in high school and it's just an opportunity, or you're getting your license, you can vote. It's just done. Doesn't mean when you're 17, you're registered. Get registered. And so when you turn 18, you don't have to do that. Even though you turn 18 on November 15th, you didn't get to vote in this November 2nd one. Guess what? There'll be another election. So
there always is. So, but you're saying that if you registered when you were 17, you still need to check when you're 18 to see whether you're actually eligible to vote?
Yeah, be sure. Or you don't even have to wait till 18. You can go on the Secretary of State's website and check today, because that purge list took place back in August. It's a good, bad thing, this purging, because Iowa State students, you know, I've worked with these voter lists, and there's hundreds of them on this list. And the list was made in 2016. You know, when they were 22 then, they're probably not living in the sorority house anymore, but they're on the list. So it kind of cleans things up.
If I want to register to vote, I am registered to vote, so I bet, but say I'm not, and say I want to, and I go to one of these locations that you mentioned. What am I looking for? What do you guys look like when you're there registering people?
Oh, we'll have a table. We'll have signs. We're all very pretty.
You're adorable.
No, we're decked out in red, white, and blue, but we have the register to vote here signs up.
You'll be easy to spot.
Yes.
Where in the union will you be?
Well, the young lady who was doing that, she was thinking we were going to be down by the bookstore, but I suggested we be outside, and she was still working on that. So we'll either be outside the bookstore area, or we'll be by the fountain.
Okay, but you don't have to be a student to register there. You're just going to be there. Yeah, yeah. Is this a national voter registration day?
Yes, it is. They send us stickers and posters to put up for these locations, and they really kind of do a little bit of the paperwork and the cheerleading to get people out.
This is organized by the League of Women Voters nationally.
No, National Voter Registration is their own organization.
Okay.
Yes, everything comes through from them as National Voter Registration Day.
I'm assuming this is a bipartisan organization like you are.
Oh, yes, yes.
I want to talk for a minute about your school candidate forum. But before we do that, can I ask you a personal question, Carolyn?
Sure.
Sure, she says, looking at me sideways. You're the president of the Ames and Story County League of Women Voters. So clearly, you have been doing service as a citizen for quite a number of years. You're a model, I think, what you would call a participatory citizenship. I'm curious, if you look back into your past, do you remember what made you a conscious citizen? Was there an event or a person that kind of made you realize the importance of participatory citizenship?
It seems like I raised your kids and I wasn't terribly involved when I was raising my children. But then after I got through that, I just all of a sudden, it became very important for democracy. And it became very important to make sure people who were voting were educated voters. And then when I joined the league and there was this voter registration, I said, we have to make voting look like it's easy. So that's what I did. It was just, I enjoyed doing that part of the voter registration. It doesn't take long to register. Mm-hmm. And I want to make it easy by going to satellite voting. It's important. It's an obligation every American should have.
We went to cover the voting. There was like a demonstration a few weeks ago, and I went with somebody to cover the one in Iowa City. And when we interviewed people, a lot of them said the same thing, which is that they were there because they believed that voting is kind of the ground zero element of democracy. It's the kind of the root of all the rest of democracy. And I was wondering if you feel that way about it.
Well, it's my vote, it's my responsibility, and it's my right as an American citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, why wouldn't you do that? I have not won every vote I've made. I'm sure a lot of us have not. But at least I feel good that I participated.
Mm-hmm.
Important to participate. So,
well, thank you for sharing my surprise question. It's personal as well as public. You know, it's a personal relationship to the country we live in, right?
Yes.
I'm speaking with Carolyn Klaus, who's the president of the League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County. Carolyn, you are also doing a school board candidate forum, right?
Yes, we are. That will be October 7th, and it's going to be in the Ames Public Library Auditorium. There are 7 candidates for the 3 school board positions, so we're doing it from 6:30 to 8:30. It seems like a long time, but it takes a while to get through people when you're asking questions.
Absolutely.
Originally, we were going to do it Zoom, and there's some problems with that with the library. So please watch for us, and I will let KHOI know how we're going to be presenting that. It'll be on YouTube or Facebook. But you can also go in person. You know, it'd be nice to make it if you wear masks in the auditorium, because I think we're going to get a good crowd for this school board because it was labeled as a Zoom request. I've had many requests already for the Zoom link to attend it, and I'm getting phone calls. Well, are you doing one? Yes, we are doing one. So I'm hearing it from Ames citizens.
Yeah, lots going on in the schools these days. Okay, so again, daytime?
October 7th, 6:30 to 8:30 at the Ames Public Library.
Okay.
You can also submit questions ahead of time if you can't be there or you don't have an opportunity to watch it. You can send those questions to me. MIMPREZ.LWVASC@gmail.com.
Okay, repeat that again slowly.
PREZ.LWVASC@gmail.com.
Okay.
It's LWV is League of Women Voters, Ames, Story County.
Okay, and that's if you have a question you'd like to add to the forum that's going to be held on the 7th of October at the Ames Public Library for the school board candidates. Thank you, Carolyn. Thank you for your public service, and thank you for coming in this morning.
Thank you for the opportunity to share all that's going on.
Okay, now go out there and get people registered, right?
Or come by and wave.
Okay, thank you so much. Barn Cat. Barn Cat is a band that spontaneously constituted itself in the alley next to KHOI. The alley next to KHOI seems to inspire artists. We have another band out there, too, called Alley Cats, who also perform in that alley. This is a band of three people. One of them was playing the washtub, and we're playing during the Octagon Arts Festival. This is Local Talk. I'm your host for the hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thanks for listening. This week has been designated Banned Books Week. I always wonder how these designations happen. So I looked it up, and it's a joint effort of a lot of different groups, including the American Library Association, American Booksellers Association, American Booksellers Foundation for Free Expression, Association of American Publishers, American Association of Journalists and Authors, and the National Association of College Stores. So this is a designation that's been going on since the 1980s, and it actually officially started yesterday, but it is being launched here in Ames today. And Dog-Eared Books and Amnesty International are working together to observe this annual event. Mary San and Von Caster, who are the co-coordinators of the Ames chapter of Amnesty International, have joined us. Thank you for coming by.
Good to be with you, Ursula.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah, it's good to see you. So tell us a little bit about what the purpose of Banned Books Week is.
Well, Banned Books Week was launched in, I think it was 1982, after a surge in books that were censored by school districts particularly, and maybe even libraries and bookstores. And it's to highlight the issue of censorship and the conviction that censorship ultimately is a bad thing. It restricts freedom of expression.
Yeah, I read that actually it was triggered by a meeting of the Booksellers Association, had a convention in Anaheim, and they had a big cage that was padlocked with books in it that had been banned. And that was kind of the image that sparked people's imagination and triggered the Banned Book Week. It must have been a very evocative thing to see. And there was actually a Supreme Court case, too, right, that happened in 1982 around the issue of banning books. So this is really a First Amendment issue, right?
Oh, certainly it is, yes. Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about how Amnesty International is involved with this and just what your goals are for this.
Yeah, Amnesty became involved about 1990, and they have a different focus. They use Banned Books Week as a week of action for people around the world who are persecuted for their writing. Maybe they're novelists, poets, journalists in particular, cartoonists, publishers. Usually what they do is they focus on a certain few cases because there are so many people who are persecuted for their writings and their art.
Amnesty International has kind of taken an American First Amendment issue and broadened it to a human rights issue globally. Is that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This year they're focusing on six cases around the world from Iran, Nigeria, Sri Lanka, Russia, Bangladesh, and Hong Kong. And this morning we're going to go down to Dog-Eared Books and set up our table, and we'll have petitions ready for people to sign on behalf of these people. But they'll need to bring their phones because the petitions will be signed using QR codes this year. We won't have paper petitions.
And what will happen with these petitions? Where will they be handed off?
They will be sent to the appropriate authority in all six of these countries, and hopefully there will be some movement on these cases. Some of these folks are in prison right now. One person has been exiled, or he fled the country. Actually, several of them are in jail, right, Vaughn?
Yes, yeah, especially in the Hong Kong case.
Can you tell us the story of one of these cases so we can get a sense of what the situations are like?
You know, there's a cartoonist in Bangladesh who was arrested last year and is under the Digital Security Act, which is this very draconian act in Bangladesh that has a broad application. It's written purposefully to be very vague in its wording so that authorities can arrest people quite easily under that Digital Security Act. This cartoonist, Ahmed Kishore. He was held in prison for about 9 months. During that time, he was beaten, tortured, if you will. He has since been released, but he faces, under this Digital Security Act, he faces 10 years in prison if he's convicted. The beatings resulted in loss of sight in his right eye, and he has knee and ankle injuries, which make it hard for him to walk. And it's interesting because we were able to find online one of his cartoons, and ironically enough, it is critical of the Digital Security Act, under which he was arrested. So it just shows the absurdity, I think, of that particular act and Bangladesh and their violation of human rights.
Do you know what he was accused of?
Nothing specific other than, you know, there was disagreement about his online postings of his cartoons. He was, you know, basically an editorial cartoonist, much like we have here, that you can find in about every newspaper, you know, on the editorial page. And he was simply arrested for, a lot of times I don't believe there's any particular act. I think it's just when the government decides that they're fed up with you, you know, they'll invoke this, in this case in Bangladesh, this Digital Security Act.
That's very serious situation.
Yes.
So if one would come down to Dog-Eared Books and use your cell phone to sign the petition, this would then go to the Bangladeshi government, which essentially is a way of saying we're watching you, or people have noticed what you're doing. Is that essentially the goal?
Yes.
Is to put a spotlight on what's happening?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, Amnesty International, they've learned, you know, or at least their belief is, and I think it's generally true, you know, that a lot of times authorities think these types of actions are done within the boundaries of the country, and it's sort of kept from the rest of the world. And as you said, Ursula, you know, when, you know, you shine the light on this injustice, it's amazing how governments sometimes, not all the time, but oftentimes, you know, they will react, you know, they will modify their behavior in a more positive way. That's the idea behind not only this case, but all six of the cases that we are featuring at our table.
And the petitions, do they make specific demands, like in the case of this man, that he be freed from his trial, or is it more of a general objection in the petition?
It's both. It usually is, you know, specific to the individual, but then, of course, there's a call for, you know, repeal of this draconian act. You know, Digital Security Act, and in the particular case of this cartoonist, you know, reminds them that Bangladesh is a signatory of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. I mean, the government has obligated themselves to honor that covenant and all of the rights listed under that covenant.
Even if they may or may not have the First Amendment, which they probably don't, but they're still part of an international effort, right?
Yes, yes. It's a UN covenant that they have agreed to adhere to.
Yeah.
So it's just reminding them that, hey, you know, you obligated yourself under this covenant to honor these particular rights, among many others, and you're violating them.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with Von Caster and Mary Sand, who were the co-coordinators of Amnesty International here in Ames and Story County. Tell us again exactly what's happening at Dog-Eared Books. You have how many different petitions?
We have six.
Six. If you go to Dog-Eared Books, can you get information about who these six people are and what has happened to them?
Yes, that's what will be obtained from the QR code. The petition itself will give a little bit of a story about the individual.
Okay.
So people will know about that.
So this is a table you're going to have at Dog-Eared Books here on Main Street during this week.
That's right. Starting today through Saturday.
Okay. So this is a great time to go in and to learn a little bit about this aspect of freedom of the press in a way, right? Or the freedom of speech.
Yes. And we will also have information about our local group too. And Amnesty International in general.
Uh-huh. Okay. Thank you. You know, I invited Jerry Hyde to join us because Jerry Hyde is the youth services manager at the Ames Public Library.
Retired?
She's already gone? Okay, she was. Past tense. I thought we had a few more days, but I guess not. But anyway, Jerry, being a librarian, is aware of this. And I asked her to come on to tell us a little bit more history of banning. I looked at the website of the American Libraries Association.
Yep.
And they have a freedom to read statement, which is very long, but essentially is saying that freedom to read and to communicate freely is essential to our democracy. And one of the more striking things I think it says is that it's in the public interest for publishers and librarians to make available the widest diversity of views and expressions, including those that are unpopular or considered dangerous by the majority. So that was an interesting statement. So, Jerry, can you tell us a little bit about the history of banning books, which has a long and distinguished history, right? I looked at on the American Library Association's website. They said that the banned books list is the second most popular page on their website.
Yeah, well, it's controversy, right? People love controversy. But yeah, and I am retired, so I am speaking as a retired youth services manager as of, what, a week and a half, I think is all it is. So my banned books has always been one of my passions, if you were, because that it is very important that we have the access to the books that we have. And you're right, American Library Association started a little bit before the booksellers did, way back when in 1939. And I always like to talk about this because the Bill of Rights for reading was created then. And we should be very proud of our state because Forrest Spaulding was a person from Iowa, a part of the American Library Association that got the Bill of Rights signed. And it was actually signed in the Des Moines Public Library building that is the World Food Center now. It was actually signed there in 1939.
Cool.
Forrest Spaulding was the spearheaded person that was getting that through with the American Library Association and with everything. You know, it was a group of them, but to have someone from the state of Iowa leading this cause, like I said, we should be very proud of Iowa that we were doing an active part in creating libraries across the country that were fighting for people's rights to be able to read what they needed to read or, you know, what the right book at the right time from all points of view to seek and receive that information without restriction. So to have that free access to all expression of ideas, which is what intellectual freedom is.
Have books been banned since time began?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I believe the Holy Bible has been banned in many places across the centuries around the world. But we kind of use those words banned and challenge in, you know, in the same way, and it isn't. So a book can be challenged, which is an attempt to remove or restrict books from people or service. It used to be Banned Book Week was all about books, but in the last, I'd say, half a dozen years or so, it's gotten a lot about anything, services, programs. Now, this year, we have some social media posts that have been 3% of the books that have been banned or things that have been banned was social media. So challenges are those where there's an attempt, but a ban is the actual removal of materials or the cancellation of services. And there has been both of those for a long, long time. And this year, ironic, American Library Association also does a very nice job on their intellectual freedom site to put together numbers and topics and that type of thing and who initiates the challenges. And the number of books this year or number of censored items this year are down compared to other years. So I find that pretty interesting. It would be interesting to see why that is and to invest some time as to why those numbers are down. My suspicion is people have gotten fired. Our librarians and school media specialists and teachers have been fired because they've refused to ban books or to take books out of their collections. So hopefully we don't put people in prison and abuse them, but there is that danger of losing your job as well.
Can you give an example of a case in, I mean, what Mary and Vaughn are talking about are very, really life-threatening situations in other countries. I think, you, in a way, in this country, it sometimes has been a little bit milder. It's been more of a professional liability, although I'm sure there was some death around that, too. Can you give an example of what is a book that we know today that was banned or is banned?
Well, the top 10 books that have been banned this year, that, which means it has the most numbers as far as, I have this here, George, The Story of Melissa, is one of those books that, and it most of these revolve around LGBTQ police harassment or undercutting police authority type of books. So let me get to my list. So our top 10 this year, George was on the top of it. And actually, the author has changed the title to that story because it is actually about the young person, the transgender person, and not George, but a fourth grader who is finding born in a male body, but is identifying as a female and trying to and struggling with that relationship that he's having with his body and, of course, with the world around him.
So this book was banned or censored because it was speaking frankly
LGBTQ.
About trans. Uh-huh. When you say it's banned, who did the banning?
What the AALA office does of intellectual freedom, they tracked if an item is challenged or actually have had things happen and the book has been removed.
By whom?
It could be a school librarian. It could be a parents. It could be administrators. There's several people that they also have that information on their website, too, as to who it is that is challenging and or taking them out.
So there is a list of banned books that's collected by the American Libraries Association?
Correct. But only the ones that have been reported.
Uh-huh.
So that's what I was talking about. The 156, that's about half of what is typically, a little over half of what typically is challenged each year. And then of those 156 challenges, there were 273 books that were targeted. And the top 10 of those 273 books were George, are stamped Racism, Anti-Racism, and You by one of my favorite authors, Jason Reynolds and Ibram Kendi. And again, that one was banned and challenged because of the author's public statements and because of the claims that the book contained selective storytelling incidents and does not encompass racism against all people. That same author, Jason Reynolds, he's got All American Boys is another book that was banned. It was top number 3. Speak by Laura Hall Anderson, which has been on the top 10 list for several years now. And it is, I'm quoting this from ALA, so it is was thought to contain a political viewpoint and it was claimed to be biased against male students and for the novel's inclusion of rape and profanity. And mm-hmm. So Speak is somewhat of an autobiography of Laura Hall Anderson, of some of the experiences that she had.
So, Jerry, I'm going to stop you there because we're running out of time. But tell us again where you can find this list if somebody's curious.
If you are interested in any of this information, there's a website. It's at ala.org called Banned and Challenged Books. And
okay.
They also this week have a variety of interviews on their Facebook page live. To talk, one of those authors are Jason Reynolds, and I believe that's tomorrow afternoon. So okay. ALA.org, Banned and Challenged Books.
Okay, thank you. We've been speaking with Jerry Hyde, formerly of the Public Library, and now you're really working with Raising Readers, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, well, hopefully there'll be lots of unbanned books for the kids to read. We were looking earlier at the list, and there's actually a lot of children's books that are banned, so that was interesting.
Usually it's children's books that are banned.
And again, I was also speaking with Mary Sand and Vaughn Caster. Tell us again once more what's happening at Dog Ear Books before we leave.
All right, this morning we're going to set up a table, and Amnesty International Group 40 is going to set up a table. And we'll have 6 petitions for persecuted writers, journalists, et cetera, that you can help. You can actually bring your cell phone, use a QR code to sign the petition. And that will help these people.
And these are cases where people's really lives are on the line, right?
They really are.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're most of them are in prison now.
Okay, well, thank you, all of you, for joining us this morning and just giving us a little bit of insight into this really huge topic. It's really First Amendment freedom of thought, and we're down with that. It's Community Radio. Very interesting. And you've been listening to Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. on Mondays. Tune in to Capital Week at 7 p.m. with Dennis Hart and Laura Bellin to catch up on all things government in Iowa. This program was engineered by Mike Murphy. Thank you, Mike. And I've been your host, Ursula Rudenberg. Stay tuned for Headline News and Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. and Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. Our theme song is always Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris. We also heard the spontaneous music of Barn Cat, which happened here in the alley over the weekend. And remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio. And thank you, everybody, for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is KHOI Story City Ames.